like one statistic that I know marketers love is to know is that if your email does not render properly, 80% of your subscribers will delete it. And then 30% of those subscribers will actually unsubscribe, which can have a big impact on your subscriber list and what you guys are doing. Because if you've done it right and you've organically built that list, that can have a pretty significant impact.
You're listening to Real Marketing Real Fast, the only podcast that brings you unfiltered, undaunted, insider information on the latest tools and technologies for online marketers. Prepare to dive deep into marketing myths, breakthrough models, and cutting-edge strategies that will have an immediate impact on the growth of your business. And now, here's your host, marketing expert Doug Morneau.
Welcome back to another episode. I am super excited to have John Thies. He is the CEO and co-founder of Email on Acid, a service provider that gives email marketers a preview of how their emails are displayed in the most popular email clients and mobile devices. His career passion is helping marketers send the perfect email. John also serves as the CEO of Cause for Awareness, a recently formed not-for-profit that empowers non-profit organizations with digital marketing resources. When he's not either on the golf course or snowboarding in the fresh Colorado powder, he resides in Denver, Colorado with his wife and son. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you on. Is there anything that I missed that you'd like to share?
No, I think you did a great job at that. Thank you.
So we talked a little bit before we got on air, and there's a couple topics we want to cover. Obviously, we want to talk a bit about the technology and the company that you've got, and then we'll talk about some of the not-for-profit and the accessibility that you think is an opportunity in the marketplace. So do you want to give us a thumbnail sketch of what Email on Acid, aside from a super cool name, what the technology is and how it helps people?
Yeah, so let me just start. Like, we are in Colorado, but I'm not on acid right now, so just get that cleared up out of the way. So what we do is, again, we show you what your email looks like on every email client mobile device, because they all display emails differently. And so one statistic that I know marketers love is to know is that if your email does not render properly, 80% of your subscribers will delete it. And then 30% of those subscribers will actually unsubscribe, which can have a big impact on your subscriber list and what you guys are doing. Because if you've done it right and you've organically built that list, that can have a pretty significant impact. And so what we do is we'll show you what it looks like, but really kind of how we started was diving into why it displays that it does. And we have this technology where every month we'll send, I don't know, like 400 or 500 emails to every email client to see what it is that they support and they don't support from a code base. What we'll do is then we'll, with our code analysis, so if it doesn't look right or render properly, you could run that and we'll point out, hey, margins aren't supported in Outlook.com unless you use a capital M. Weirdest thing. But those are the types of things that we find that we can give you insight into so that you don't like pull your hair out trying to figure out why Outlook's rendering something the way that it does.
Well, and I think that a lot of smaller businesses probably don't even know that this exists, that they're likely just sending out an email. And I was doing some research for a book we're publishing coming out in the fall around email marketing, and one of the statistics that scared me around rendering was the high number of mobile users who get your email, and if it doesn't display right, they don't unsubscribe or delete it. They mark it as spam.
Oh, wow.
That's so I'm thinking, wow, now I'm really in the penalty box because they get annoyed that I couldn't take the time to format an email that they could look at.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that one, but you're right. I mean, there's some serious negative impacts on what can happen if it's not rendered properly. You know, it happens, right? Like we didn't know it was an issue until it fell into our laps 8 years ago. And we were like, oh, wow, we didn't know this, because we kept getting thrown under the bus by one of our clients. And so we really didn't even know it was an issue until someone told us about it. And so I get it. Like, it's, you wouldn't think that in this day and age that it would be this difficult to develop HTML emails. But unfortunately, that's the world that we live in.
Yeah, that and the fact that everybody's changing the rules and changing the way that they're displayed. I remember once sitting at a conference and looking at Gmail when Gmail started hiding images. and a lot of people that I knew were using full images in their email. And so the presenter said, okay, so let's look at what your email looks like in Gmail. And they put it up on the screen. And of course, the image was hidden. So the little red X. And then right below it said unsubscribe. So basically, if they didn't approve loading images, the only thing they got from you was an option to unsubscribe.
Yep, that's you're exactly. And you know what, too? Like what happens with that, the same type of thing, what you're talking about, is I've seen that word in the pre-header text. If you're using all base image design, but you don't put a pre-header text in there, it will say, do you want to unsubscribe? Right from the pre-header text before you even open the email. And actually, nice. It's kind of funny that you say that because in my some of the presentations I give, I talk about pre-header text, and that's one of the examples, is that a company a couple of years ago, Beach Riot, sent out an email, and that's what they have. It had the copyright, and it says, if you don't want this email, unsubscribe. So wow. I think it's kind of funny that you say
Did
that.
Did they have a good conversion on that?
That I don't know, and hopefully none of your listeners are from Beach Riot. If they are, I apologize, but... That's one that just like I have to share. So
yeah, hey, we all make mistakes, right? I mean, that's just the way it goes.
We've right all there. Done it with email, and that's what's funny. Like, there's so much involved with it that it's really hard to, you know, that things slip by that could have been improved.
Absolutely. So, you know, let's assume that we've done a good job and our emails render right and they look nice on all the various email platforms and on all the different devices. How else can you help us with what you guys do?
So what we do, another thing that we do is we have, you know, we have spam check. So a pre-send spam filter check. So you can see, hey, what if I send this email, what will happen to it on a like high level basis. Now, obviously there's a lot that goes into deliverability as far as IP reputation and engagement and all that stuff. But we give you kind of that high level content wise, like will the content trigger any flags? That's right. One piece. Another one is kind of like on the post send side, we have an analytics platform. So we'll show you the opens, clicks, the geolocation, all that stuff. But we go kind of farther than what most ESPs do in the fact that we can actually track engagement through our analytics. So we can tell you how long someone's viewing an email, and we can show you a heat map about where they're engaging with that email as well based on the links and stuff like that. And so what really helps you kind of identify is how well are we doing with our marketing programs over time. So you can look at, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 email campaigns, say, hey, is our engagement going up or is it going down?
That's cool.
And then you can kind of classify that too, whether it's a transactional email. Obviously, you're not going to have super high engagement, but if it's a newsletter where you have a lot of content, well, you're hoping that you're going to probably have a lot of engagement with that. And so how are we doing? Are we providing relevant content?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see that technology's kind of caught up. I mean, years ago we were running very large campaigns for clients where we would rent third-party lists. So we never see the list. The list owner maintains the list. So maybe it's like the Washington Post and they send it out to 400,000 people. And we actually, because the technology wasn't there, we would include images throughout the entire email. And then we would just go look at the raw web logs to see which images were pulled. And from there, we could make an assessment of how deep people read these emails.
Interesting. Well, that's really interesting because, well, wouldn't they all load though, no matter how far they scroll?
Well, they would load, but I mean, these guys were writing 16 and 20 page long copy emails.
Oh, wow.
So they were huge emails, and we could say, hey, you know what? Only a third of the images are loading. People are clicking away. You can definitely, you know, reduce your copywriting bill and reduce a lot of your content.
Oh, I see how you're saying. Okay, I get it. I see how you're doing that. No, and that's interesting, right? And so I think that's really like a really creative idea. So good job on that. I think that's, I never would have thought about that.
Well, given the lack of tools back then, it's like, okay, we need to figure out something. We need to, you know, look and see what was available. What could we do?
Yep. No, it's very creative. So nice work on that one.
So in terms of assumptions, so I'm a small business owner or whatever the case may be, and I'm using an email service provider. I'm not going to name any because there's so many that are good products out there. I use 3 or 4 myself for my clients as well. What's the biggest assumption that I think the end user is making when they send out an email?
That's a good question. I think there's two, right? One is that they assume that if they're using the WYSIWYG, inside the ESP that will render properly. I think
that's
one.
What I was thinking, yeah.
And I think the other one too, and this kind of really isn't the scope of what we do, but when I just think about ESPs and stuff like that, is that they're in charge of my deliverability. And, you know, I think there's this misconception where marketers say, hey, I'm going to use ESPX, and they need to manage my inbox placement. And I think that's true to a certain extent, but I think most of the deliverability issues can be resolved by a marketer following the best practices of inbox placement. And they have that on their control. Now, yeah, there is some stuff in the ESP, like if someone's spamming and they're using the same IP, yeah, that can have a negative impact.
Sure.
But I think the majority of it comes down to the marketer and what they're doing to maintain their list.
Yep, I think so. I agree. Like sending relevant, engaging content that adds value to people's life, getting rid of the dead emails that people aren't opening or clicking through. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think that engagement one's the biggest one. And I think that people always think, oh, well, I need a bigger list to be better, to like broaden my, like to get my message out there. But what's happening now, and I don't know if you know this, Doug, but like Outlook.com and Gmail now, they're starting to track engagement now about how people are engaging with your email.
Sure.
Throughout your list.
Yeah.
And so when people hear that, like, okay, it's like, well, drop them out. Like if they're not opening your email, like after two, put them to another list and then try to re-engage with them. And don't.
Yeah, and that's what we've recommended for sure. You know, I wasn't sure I had heard that. So we were doing some testing for our client on that around engagement in terms of, and what we considered engagement for the email. So I don't know if this is what you were referring to, is where opens, how many links they clicked on the email, how much time they spent on the email, and did they reply or forward it?
Yep, that's exactly it.
Okay, exactly. So we were testing all those things to try to improve engagement for someone whose engagement was suffering. And the biggest thing we could do is segment the list and send all the openers first. And that made a huge difference.
Oh, it does. And if you think about it too, is like if you're paying an ESP, because most ESPs charge you based on how many people you have on your list. And so my biggest argument is that why pay for someone when they're not even opening it?
Well, because when we're at the bar, I can tell you how big my list is. And if my list is bigger than yours, then I must win.
Yeah, then it's better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we had one client where we were sending out, you know, we would do a blast for them. And it was a blast because it was paid for advertising. And he said, you know, and he had a decent budget. We were spending between $75,000 to $100,000 a week. And he said, you know, I don't really care how many emails you send out. Really, all I care about is how many people buy stuff.
Yep.
Which comes back to your point. It doesn't matter how big your list is. If you've got 1 million people on your list and 1,000 are opening, you have a problem.
Yeah. And I would rather have, like, if you talk about that, I would rather have 1,000 fully engaged subscribers on my list than having 30,000 that don't care.
Yeah, that's right. They're indifferent to your brand.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they're not going to buy. I mean, then there's this whole thing about top of mind, which, you know, there's people in the industry that saying, you know, send more email, but I don't know. I don't know if I really agree with that assessment.
I think it depends, I guess, on what your message is. And my question always is, you know, when I get up and I check my email, am I excited to get your email or am I going, oh, there's another whatever? You know, I get a lot of emails. I'm sure you do as well. And there's some brands that I love. It's like, oh, cool, email's here. And I want to immediately just, you know, grab a cup of coffee, sit down and read. And there's others that's like, yeah, you know, I should really unsubscribe from that. I'm tired of getting their ads.
Yep. And I think that's a great point, because that's where I think marketers should strive to do, is it strive to create that relevancy and that engaging content where people love to see your email versus just sending an email to send it. And we use a phrase here where we talk about being relentless about your relevancy. Because the fact is that that's what we want. Like, I don't want people to be like, oh, great, another email from Email and Acid. I want people to see, wow, great, what do they have to tell me today?
That's a great phrase. I love that. Be relentless with your relevancy.
Yep.
Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit. We talked a little bit before we got going here. And so I'd like you to share with us a little bit more about the accessibility discussion that we started.
Yeah, so what I'm really trying to push for, and same with Email and Acid, is to really get people to think about accessibility within your email campaigns. And kind of the definition of accessibility is just making sure that someone with a disability or those are using assistive technologies, so like kind of the eye tracking things or the puff and blow technologies, don't miss out on key information when viewing, you know, your web page, your landing page, or your emails. And I think that's something that is definitely overlooked when marketers, like, we just don't think about it. And so, you know, again, marketers love statistics, so I have some statistics here for you that I want to kind of talk about. And that it's the World Health Organization estimates that there's about 285 million people out there that have a visual impairment. And that could be low vision, color blindness, blind, all that stuff. And so to put that in perspective, there's 325 million people in the United States. So it's big. It's huge. And yeah. You want to talk, and if that doesn't, you know, kind of blow, you know, a little wind up your skirt, there are people with disabilities represent $1 trillion in disposable income.
Yeah, so if that is an entrepreneur or free enterprise who doesn't say, hey, here is a audience that is being underserved.
There you go. And so, and we were talking about this earlier, like we have this whole, another thing in our product, we have a thing called Inspiration where we go and we collect all like thousands of email, like we subscribe to companies and we take a screenshot and we have like this massive library of emails for people to look at and say, oh, I like that design or I don't. And what we did is we actually keep the code of that. We keep the headers, all this stuff. And so we did a search on that. What we found is we took a sample. We found that 0.001% of all emails being sent have accessibility things that they do within their email to be accessible.
Well, it's certainly a new topic to me. So how does one go about that?
It's really actually pretty easy. So one thing is, I think, is just being mindful of it, having it top of mind.
Right.
And so one thing that we've talked about that I kind of educate people on is like kind of thinking about it. And one really interesting exercise that you can do is try to navigate your email experience with your weaker hand. So if you're right-handed, try using your left hand to navigate your email experience. Or if you're right-handed, use your left hand, or your left hand, use your right hand to try to navigate your email experience to see like how difficult it is.
Okay.
And that's cool. one kind of way that you can kind of think about it. And now we live in a, you know, mobile space now where, you know, I think it's over 54% of all email opens are done on a mobile device.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's not really thinking about how people engage with their emails, but how they engage with their devices. So I don't know if anyone listening or you, Doug, have thought about like or have turned on accessibility within your iPhone or your Android device. It's actually really, really interesting. It's actually quite difficult to navigate a mobile device with accessibility turned on.
I'm going to try it when we're done the interview. I'm going to wait till my get together my kids who, they're early 20s. So they're old enough to have their own devices and it'll be interesting discussion around the dinner table saying, okay, everyone turn on accessibility and let's see what it's like for the rest of the world who doesn't have fully functioning fingers and ability to move them like we do.
Yep. And it's actually quite eye-opening, like the different experience that you can have with it. And so the first thing that we try to do is just get people to think about it and be mindful of it. And because a lot of times we don't think about it. So another example that for someone that color blindness, right? One of the main colors that they can't see are red, blue, and green. Okay.
So blue, the color of all the hyperlinks.
Yes, that's exactly it. So if you're moving that underline in your links, if you're colorblind, you can't see blue, you don't know what a link is and you don't like, you just won't see it.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, it's just being kind of like cognizant of what that is.
That might affect your click throughs.
It absolutely will be. And you think about like how many people have that, you know, again, it's these little things that you can do to better improve. And there's other things you can do on the code side. What we can do after this is like, I know on your the blog, the podcast page, you can have links. So we'll include links to some of these examples.
That'd be great.
Because there's a lot of code stuff here that you can do. Like, for example, in the HTML tag in your email, all you need to do is set the language. Like language, you know, like EN or ES for Spanish or whatever.
Yep.
Because what that does, it gives that reader and that interpreter the understanding of what the language is written in. Like how do I need to pronounce the words I'm talking about?
So is that something, I mean, I've never thought of that. Is that something that people don't do?
They don't. No. They might do it for a landing page or for a website, but not for an email.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the next thing, and the same exact thing, is the title tag. So we all put in title tags on our web pages because we want that to be up in the tab.
Sure.
Well, the same thing goes for email. You want to put that in. Now, it's not display anywhere, but what happens is the reader will start going through it and will add context to what the email is about.
Okay.
And then, you know, like, again, I have a lot of recordings like to really exemplify this stuff, but tables, there's a, like, we're living in the 90s when we're talking about email because we have to use tables and nested tables and all this stuff. And so what happens is with this is that tables, like the reason for tables is to show tabular content. So like an Excel spreadsheet where you have column one, row one, this value, column two, right? So all this stuff. And so what happens is when the interpreter reads it, it will go through and talk about, oh, I'm on a table row one, table data one, blah, blah, and kind of read through that table structure.
Yep.
But if you add one attribute, role equals representation, or no, sorry, role equals presentation, it will skip all that and just read the content. And it's fascinating. Like there's a clip that I'll give you that you put on your webpage where it literally cuts down the time of reading one table by a third.
Wow.
Now,
so
you
these
think
sound like they're simple to implement, but they're just not top of mind with people.
Exactly. And what the great thing about it is, none of this stuff has any impact on rendering. None. Absolutely none. And that's what we're trying to educate is saying, listen, like you do this up front and you are setting the standard, like you're going to do better. You're going to, you know what I mean? Because you're making it more accessible. You're broadening your reach and you're limiting the complexity that someone has to go through or the things that it has to do to read your email with a screen reader.
It's interesting because I remember I was doing some work with a large client and we're looking at the kind of their role and their involvement in the community. And what was interesting was looking at the conversion numbers. It was a UK study of how many people would shop at a particular business if they were involved and did not-for-profit work. And I'm looking at the change in the kind of the social landscape and the expectation of companies and corporations. So to me, this seems like a super easy win just because we should do this to be respectful of people that don't have full vision or challenge to get access to this data to make it accessible. Beyond that, obviously there's shows that you're a good corporate citizen being respectful of all people.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And so it's kind of funny. We kind of use a phrase and this is kind of, I don't know. It's, I mean, it just kind of brings light. It's like, don't be a jerk. Think about accessibility. And that we're going to be doing some campaigns around that, like don't be a jerk campaign about accessibility, because if that, even like with the $1 trillion of disposable income, like just do it. I mean, it doesn't have any impact and it's really, really easy to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. I mean, when you look at Tom's shoes, when they came out, buy a pair, we'll give a pair, then everybody copied them. So, you know, if you're a big corporation, you're listening to this, you could just do this and you would look good to the community, but you'd also probably make a lot more money. So,
well, a lot of them have to be. If you think about it too, like colleges and government, they have to be ADA compliant. And
right.
So it's going to come down to email at some point. They're focusing on the web now. And now as email grows and grows in popularity in the return on investment and all this stuff, it's going to come. So you might as well start sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. No time like the present to get going.
Yep.
So with the work that you do, I want to ask you a question about what you do with the digital marketing resources. So what does your company do, or what do you do in terms of helping the not-for-profits?
You're talking about Cause for Awareness, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So this is kind of a side project that my wife and I started. So what we want to do is every year, three times a year at EOA, we go out and we do community outreach. So we'll, as a whole company, we'll go out, we'll donate our time to nonprofits and kind of a team building, but also giving back to the community. And there was one that we did last year where I was kind of, before we were driving over, I was thinking about, okay, how can EOA, or how can I help these nonprofits? And EOA is really kind of in a niche market, right? Where it's like, you know, rendering, okay, that's great. It's not actually doing sends and all this stuff. And so it's important, but it's a niche. And what I started thinking about is like, wow, okay, I've developed some really good relationships over the past 8 years. What if we created something where marketers and stuff could come and help other nonprofits with their digital marketing? Because there's a couple things. There's a stigma within our culture about how nonprofits cannot need to spend more money towards the cause than versus to overhead.
Right.
And
yep.
They look at marketing. Like there was this big thing with, you know, Irma and all this stuff about Red Cross not spending enough towards the cause. And I get it. But the other hand too, is they need to be able to make money. Like they need to be able to make money. The more money they can make, the more money, more things that they can do towards their cause. And so something that's definitely neglected is obviously marketing, email marketing. This could be, you know, Cause for Awareness is not really just for email marketing. It's for social, SEO, anything digital to help a nonprofit build awareness. So that's why we called it Cause for Awareness. So creating something to help other people build awareness towards their nonprofit. And, you know, these nonprofits that we go to help, they're struggling. They don't have the resources to do it, and they don't understand the need for it, or they can't, or they feel like they can't put more money towards it. And so if we can create an organization that goes in and give, like, basically, like, it's a community-based organization where we go in and we say, hey, who wants to help this nonprofit revamp their digital marketing platform? And then we go and we get volunteers, and we go and we do upfront research, like analyzing where they're at, talk to them where they want to be, help them set strategies and goals, help them implement stuff. And then after the fact, kind of see how they're doing. Now, the great thing.
That's cool.
And the great thing about that is, like, for you or me, it's like us, we get that thing of like, hey, I did something good. Now, those corporations who might donate product, or ESP who donates their services, we'll build a case study and say, hey, this is where they were, this is what we did, and this is what they're doing now. So it's kind of a multiple thing to help them with their cause, and also kind of help society say, hey, if they do invest a little bit in this, it's not a bad thing, because here's what they can generate. Here's what you can do with it.
That's a really cool idea. I mean, we've done, I think I mentioned to you as we were chatting before as well, we've done that where we've donated web services and email services and logos. And I used to, I went to the DMA every event they had for years and years. And there was a local not-for-profit that out our way that I would just go visit. I would just send them a note, say, hey, I've been away at 5 days at this conference. And they would call all their marketing people and their board and their different offices in Florida and all around the world. And I'd sit down and spend half a day and just kind of go through the highlights, because we know that they're not going to send someone to the DMA to listen to the speakers and get the what's new in the marketing world.
Yeah, because they don't have time. They're, you know, that could be, and then the resources are stretched thin. And if we can go in and help them, and I think there's a big need. I don't want to compete with nonprofits. I want to help nonprofits, and so that's why I think this is kind of a win-win for those people involved and those vendors and those companies involved. And eventually, I want to have, you know, here in Denver, a free conference just for nonprofits, all about digital marketing. And if you're in a nonprofit, you can come for free and, you know, learn about best practice, learn about the little things that you can do, and have people, you know, from other nonprofits, maybe, you know, Donors Choose or the Red Cross, talk about what they do to help create awareness and get the donations and stuff like that. So,
well, and sometimes provide training. I know we've done some stuff politically as well, where we'd go in and we'd get a group of volunteers and we would give them training. So now they had a new skill they could help out. It was money that didn't have to be spent, because now there were gifted services by volunteers that were passionate about a particular cause or direction that they were going.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you've shared a lot of stuff with us today on a number of topics. We don't normally break it up into three different sects, but talking to you before, I thought what you guys were doing was really cool. And, you know, I think like you said, you're in a niche, you have a niche product, but, and you're not a sender, but if you send and people can't see it, then it doesn't matter.
That's right.
And if they get it and they don't open it or click and engage, then that doesn't matter either. You're just wasting resources. So I think you should be happy with what you guys are doing. Obviously, you're doing a good job, and it gives you a chance to get back out in the community and build that up as well. So a couple questions and then we'll let you get back. Where's the best place for people to find you? So if they want to reach out and they want to learn more about Email on Acid, I'm assuming emailonacid.com is the place to start.
Yep, emailonacid.com, definitely a place to start. For Cause for Awareness, this is causeforawareness.org. And then for me, I'm on Twitter, John E. Thies, and then LinkedIn. You can always find me there as well.
I love talking to people who have been in the business world for a while, because they're still on Twitter.
I try. You kind of have to be these days. I'm not as active as I should be, but I try to. I have to make a concerted effort to do that.
Well, a lot of small businesses that I know, and they go, Twitter, nobody's on Twitter. Everyone's on Instagram. And I'm thinking, man, the real business guys are on Twitter. And what about the work that you're doing around awareness? Now, is there a website for that? Or are these just resources you're going to be able to provide for us to put up on our show notes for our listeners?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you talked about the awareness. Is there an actual organization where people can go learn?
Yeah, so Cause for Awareness is this causeforawareness.org. And then for the accessibility stuff, we'll give you something in the show notes, a couple links where you guys can go and listen to a webinar that we had a couple weeks ago, and we'll start from there.
That'd be really cool. So, hey, I really thank you for taking time and sharing a bit about, you know, how you help out our community and how you're helping marketers get their emails delivered, rendered, and hopefully doing a better job of what they do. So thanks for your time. Great to have you on the show, and I look forward to getting your show notes up and sharing those with our listeners.
Awesome. Thank you, Doug. I'm honored to be a part of it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's all for this episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Now it's time to take your marketing to the next level by visiting DougMorneau.com and downloading our advanced marketing white papers, as well as exclusive resources based on today's episode. That's DougMorneau.com. Until next time, we look forward to serving you right here on Real Marketing Real Fast.